Now and Again is brought to you by the Cage Club Podcast Network. For all things Cage, Keanu, and more, head on over to cageclub.me. That is cageclub.me. Please play this song on the radio. Please play this song on the radio. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It is Now and Again, Side B for June 2018. And I'm kind of hands-off here, honestly. Nico's off probation. He can make episodes on his own. This is all him. Nico, how you doing? What are we doing?
You know, I'm doing a great job throwing my voice and being both of us since I can make episodes on my own. So here's what happened. I was kind of looking ahead because, you know, a good host does his homework. And one of the things I noticed is that the next Now features Rihanna. And I thought to myself, that's probably the first appearance of Rihanna on a Now. And the more I thought about that, the more I thought about the major turning point that represented in my life. Not like, you know, it's not like I discovered Riri and suddenly I found love in a hopeless place. I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about what that meant in terms of the cultural vernacular of the pop princess, actually. Because we sort of, we pleasantly said a fond adieu to our wonderful brothers, the boy bands. We waved each one of them a fair goodbye. We listened to their songs one last time. We talked about some deep cuts. We shared some singles, and we said, you got facial hair, get the fuck out. And now...
And we threw dirt on the grave.
And now it is time to watch these pop princesses grow into queendom. Each one of these, many actually, I shouldn't say each one of these because some of these women went on to do nothing with their careers, but a number of these women did go on to be very successful things. We're going to talk about Jessica Simpson, who I'm going to defend that I still think is pretty talentless, but she is now a multi-millionaire CEO on her own for her own shoe and fashion line. And these women are at a point in their careers where they're many of them are about to shift out of the limelight, or at least out of the limelight in a positive way, for a considerable amount of time. Some of them are going to enter new careers, and some of them are never going to be heard from again. I just thought it was time to say goodbye to these ladies before the new generation of Rihannas take over the airwaves.
Yeah, I'm into that, because this is, I've kind of been down on these last couple of episodes saying, it's just kind of reductive. If I hear another Jessica Simpson song, I might stick my head into a blender, which if it was a cover song, I genuinely might. And I'm ready to move on from this, and we are going in a direction that I'm more excited about. And I think also me at that time, I think I come back to pop. I think I embrace it maybe very, very soon, maybe a year of time. So maybe three or four more volumes of Now. A certain lady brings me back into pop in a pretty hard way. So, and Rihanna is definitely a start of that. So I'm excited to get into this, but you have cultivated.
Yeah, you came back to pop music like a monster.
Ah, yes, yes. I really sunk my teeth into it.
I gotta be real. I revisited Fame Monster the other day in my car for a 40-minute drive, and yeah, you know what? Like the five songs on that thing, I blast like I'm dying. Goddamn. When she was like at the top of her game, she's a fucking pop warrior.
Yeah, the fame discs were pretty wild. But we will get there. Let's talk now Let's talk about, this is like the in memoriam section of the Oscars, except way less sad. Let's talk about the people who get left behind, and let's talk about who gets Dennis Farina on this list. There's one for the film buffs out there. So Nico, why don't you kick us off with some of these the highlights on this list.
Well, I do hope that Chris makes the full playlist available.
Yes, it will be available at a certain website, perhaps cageclub.me, and in the liner notes if you get this on any kind of other listening device.
So I'd like to start with JoJo's Leave, Get Out. JoJo just does actually represent something interesting that we talked about. We made jokes about the fact that JoJo was so barely legal that just discussing her on a podcast and being males in our 30s puts us on a list. Mm-hmm. You know what? That makes her the target.
What do you mean by that?
That literally makes her somebody, the target age of the Now on Now. And she had several hits in her early child age career. She had Leave, Get Out, and she had... little too late. She would go on later on to return and have a few more hits, but I just really wanted to make sure that JoJo got representation, as she was at the tail end and kind of on the R&B-zier side of things. Mm. But JoJo was out there making music on Now, that while she was the target demographic age.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, worth mentioning, a couple of these are returning champions, some stuff that we have seen before on the show. But a lot of this is new songs, at least. I think almost every artist we have at least briefly mentioned, except for one or two. So yes, this next one also, I believe we've covered before.
She was just kind of like her voice was super crazy good and just kind of out of nowhere. Don't know why more didn't happen with her. I just thought this was a song that, like, you know, first there was Stuck and it was like, oh, goddamn, Stuck is everywhere. And then, you know, it's kind of a weird side note. I felt like one day I heard that there was just this song, So Sick, by Neo, and everybody was like, oh, man, So Sick by Neo. And I'm like, sure. And then I think the next day, everybody was just like, if you're not a huge Neo fan, you're an idiot. And I was like, what did I miss? It's been one song. And then everybody was like, he's got 7 number ones. And I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And before I knew it, I was like old on Neo, but I love Neo, and his new single, Summertime, is great.
Well, that happens, like, every day now. It's like, I blink and Post Malone has 19 Billboard number ones. I'm just like, what is going on? Who are these people? Where are they coming from?
Really, it's, I, you know what I was just thinking about? Drake has been Drake for a decade.
Mm, yep.
I mean, Drake has been around long enough that he is starting to lose his cool factor because he never decided to transition into dad.
Yeah, that's because he hid this kid for so long.
dad shame. So, okay, so anyway, Stacey Orrico, More to Life, you know, I kind of threw this in, and she's sort of a catch-all for the people who aren't remembered. There were so many this song. There were so many Stacey Orricos, 1 to 2 hits, promoted heavily by Jive Records, tour supporting Britney, or tour supporting Christina, went on the Nickelodeon All That Music Fest tour, which was a real thing that featured a lot of these bands. It was a really great way to get several of these bands on one bill. They would do the 4 songs that they could actually manage to do because there was just that much choreography. Please don't make them do 8 songs. Oh, and yeah. It gave parents a friendly place to do it, and there was some legitimacy to the music because it was very live band, very well produced. 90 Degrees did it, Monica did it. But anyway, Stacey Orrico does sort of represent, for me, kind of like the one-hit wonders that they're somebody's favorite. You know what I mean? Like, a friend of mine recently posted a meme that was like, you know, I'm still over here listening to the same 5 albums for a decade. And, like, I have those, but I do make sure to go through new releases every Friday and challenge myself to listen to new music every single week. Yeah. Because you can become really stagnant otherwise, and I have discovered some insanely amazing shit. Shura, the artist that I continuously bring up how amazing that record is, discovered her at random clicking around Google Play Music. And I think she's incredible. I frequently actually find out that artists I love have new records out that way.
Yeah.
So I do think it's worth it. But
And with the internet now, I mean, like, you can just go on to Spotify and be like, new releases. Or you can find someone on YouTube or something like that who catalogs this stuff. Like, for me, I mean, you talk about Shura a lot. I talk about Charlie Bliss a lot. I wouldn't have known they existed if Anthony Melon Fantano didn't mention them just in passing. Didn't even do a full review of them. Just mentioned them in passing as on part of like a list of songs or a list of albums that he didn't fully review over the month that it came out. And him just kind of being like, it's very 90s, made me go back to it. Like, you can find people out there. Dead End Hip Hop is another one. Just like, if you like a genre, there are people out there talking about it. And now more than ever, I think there was just an article that said, like, you stop finding new music after you're 30. It's just like, why?
Yeah.
Why?
It's like a brain thing or something. But, like, I'm so lucky. One of the things I love about our boyfriend is, you know, I love that when I met my husband, he introduced me to a whole lot of things I had never experienced before. And it was this, like, new infusion in my life from another side of my age demographic that I just wasn't familiar with. what's really cool is our boyfriend, being a bit younger, brings shit I've never heard of to the table. Like, stuff I'm like, no, I know about your age demographic. And he's like, no, you don't. And, schools me in a really good way. And he just turned me onto this album, Bury Me at Makeout Creek by Mitski.
Oh, yeah, that album's great. And her her follow-up to that is really good, too.
Yeah, the shit's really incredible. Yeah. He just turned me onto that. It was, so anyway, back to story at hand. Too many one-hit wonders out there to not include at least somebody.
Yeah.
And I just thought Stacia Rico, there's something really nice to her voice. A little nasally, but, you know, that was the time.
You know, if you put a guillotine over my head and were like, yes or no, have you ever heard a Vitamin C song that wasn't Graduation? I would have said no, and I would have had my head cut off. Because this song, Smile, featuring Lady Saw, was definitely a major part of some ad campaign in the last 10 years.
Yeah, it came out in 1998 or 1999. It's one of the things I like about Vitamin C, to be really honest with you, Colleen Fitzpatrick. She's a really great writer. She's like a really great songwriter and a pretty good producer, and she's a pretty good performer. She's an okay vocalist. I don't mean any disrespect, but she's definitely a producer and a writer. And I really loved her album. It was this really, this particular record was really experimental, really challenging. It was weird pop for our eighth grade year. If you go back and listen to it, it's really strange.
It kind of reminds me of what Pink first did on that first album with, like, There You Go. Not quite as abrasive as that. Definitely a lot cleaner. But just kind of in that same way, but that you could be there for a while, but you can't stay there because it's of a moment. And Pink kind of went on to transcend that. And I feel like kind of what you were saying with Vitamin C not having the vocal talent, maybe she couldn't.
Yeah, she was a little groovier. Like, she definitely loved her some 70s soul funk a little bit more. Not that, you know, because obviously Pink went on to be a soulful goddess, but Vitamin C put in a little bit more R&B funk into it, and it only went so far in the vein of pop that she was able to access. Her follow-up record sounded really similar to this record, but it was just sort of like secondary versions of it. She went on to do a lot of producing and writing and being a really great contributor behind the scenes, and that's kind of why she's on this list. She represents the women that went on to promote women and be positive. Also, really funny enough, she appears on Giles, Anthony Stewart Head's electronica album, Music for Elevators. Now, I'm going to defend this record. It's really, really good.
I feel like you just said a sentence that has maybe never been said. Well, it's definitely been said before, because this is apparently a real thing that exists.
And I've talked about it for years. Okay. So, not to you. I probably have always been like, you know, don't tell him about the Giles record you love.
I knew that existed. I remember that one.
Yeah, she appears as backup vocals on a couple of tracks. It's just sort of like generic, pure moodsy, electronic-y elevator music. It's called Music for Elevators, and it really is Music for Elevators. It also has a couple of songs that feature some Buffy alumni, like some of the other capable singers from the musical episode.
Oh yeah, I forgot they did a thing where they all sang a little bit on that show.
Yeah, and it was actually really good. He's a really talented vocalist. He used to do theater. Anyway, back to Vitamin C. This is not about a man. This is about a woman, and that's what I'm supposed to be representing right now, so I should stop talking about men and focus on what I'm doing. So,
I think people come here for the tangents, Nico. I think what we're doing as a jump-off point is secondary at this point.
Yeah. That's
they know what they're signing up for.
It's like we're Lil' Kim. It's the jump-off. It's exactly that. We've been gone for a minute, and now we're back with the jump-off. You come for the... People showed up for the rap, but they stay for the pasties. So, anyway, I actually really just think Vitamin C was a little bit ahead of her time. She was challenging. She was interesting. I think she was a bit older than the average pop princess. She was just a real cool producer and writer. And I just wanted to make sure that the artists that went on to be behind the scenes got represented. Just like people think of Four Non Blondes as a one-hit wonder with What's Up, you know, what's going on? That's called What's Up. And it's Linda Perry fronted and wrote all the music. And Linda Perry went on to be Pink's songwriting partner.
She wrote everything. Every song you've ever heard was written by Linda
Perry. We actually just talked about that recently. And the guy from Semisonic, next time you're like, nothing ever happened to Closing Time, he co-writes Adele's hits.
Well, that's like, it blew my mind when, if you had told me, like, I think I mentioned this on the show before, if you had told me that the fucking dweeb from Steel Train was going to be the guy who went on to write, like, every song for Taylor Swift and Lorde and just, you know, Jack Antonoff, like, that dude... I fucking saw him in bars, and he sucked in, like, 2003. I guess there are people who like Steel Train. I don't know why. But now he's Jack Antonoff. It's like, how does this happen?
Yeah.
But it's cool that it does.
No, totally. I was trying to think of the other one that, like, that's exactly the thing I was going to say. It's like, how did this person become that person? Oh, damn it. Who was I going to... It's such a fascinating thing to try and... How did this person ultimately... propel other people to greater success,
right?
But they couldn't do it for themselves.
Yeah, I do wonder. Mentioning, you know, Vitamin C being a little bit ahead of her time, I do think this time period from like 1998 to 2004 is weird and dire, and a lot of the stuff is of its moments and maybe can't exist outside of that. Much like a lot of 80s music, the best of it transcends it; the worst of it is stuck there forever. I wonder if there are some artists that just, like, if they had come out 3 years before that, or, like, 3 years after that, like, would have gone on to some other different-sounding success. But, I mean, that's just, you know, you can never kind of figure out that hypothetical. I can guarantee you Dream would not, because this is fucking 2001 as hell.
I love this album, but I love this album in a... I don't even know how to... There's this notion, and it's something I've been talking about with sometimes my friends my age, some people older than me, people younger than me. I always try and ask them, talk to me about the art that you now understand fails the test of quality, but at the time nobody could have told you that. Nobody could have told you that. Every word of it was so important. And this was like, I even knew it was a stupid pop record. You know what I mean? Like, I even knew it was a dumb pop album, but there was just something about this record I loved. At the time, Puff Daddy put this record together, this band together, to be like the next big girl group, to be the next big Spice Girls. Now, it didn't really work out, as you can tell. They did go on to have a second record. I think they might even have had a third record. I actually really do like this record. It has a really great cover of Mr. Telephone Man by New Edition.
This video is, even though I think the song is pretty locked into that era, I think I mentioned that the SR-71 video was like the most of its time thing ever, like just fucking down to the month. Like, it can't exist. If you take it out of there, it just shrivels and dies. This is like the girl equivalent to that. Is like the fashion is just locked in that time. The way that they are interacting with each other and the camera and the video cliches is just so of its time. Like, it's a perfect time capsule of this moment that we're leaving.
Yeah, I agree. And that's part of why it's here. This this is all the girl group crap. I do want to hit a couple of things before we hit the next person. The next person is specifically on here for some specific reasons.
I think this might be my favorite song of the people I don't remember. I did kind of forget this song existed, but as soon as I was clicking through this and I turned this on, I was like, oh, this song has a little something.
It is terrible, but you mentioned a couple of people while you were kind of scrolling. You mentioned Hoku. I want to mention Hoku for a second. Hoku was Don Ho's daughter, and she had two, I would say, moderate hits. She had Another Dumb Blonde, which I always thought was a pretty poorly produced song.
Oh, it's terrible.
I always thought it was a pretty...
The production is awful.
The writing is awful. The performance isn't very good. I believe she had a track on the Pokemon movie soundtrack.
Sure.
I think actually along with Vitamin C. She never really landed. It just didn't work out for her. I don't know what it was, but she could get some MTV airplay. She just didn't catch on. Pink obviously shed any pop princess mentality, element, anything. Just shred the shit out of it and wrote herself to stardom.
Yeah.
Pink's been around since we've been in the 8th grade. So she's had like a 16, 18 year career. That's extraordinary. And she's only gotten cooler with age. I don't really care for her music right now, to be honest. It's just not my thing. But I think she fucking sings the hell out of what she sings.
Yeah, we're going into a period like maybe 3 or 4 years away from probably her peak So that's at least something to look forward to.
Yeah. Oh my God. I was about to be like, and I guess Christina Milian's about to fade away. Holy shit. I was talking about how Ashanti had her career stolen by Rihanna. I feel like the same thing happened to Christina Milian. She hasn't happened yet. And I'm already saying her career's over because Rihanna's coming. And Rihanna, to be honest, we're about to enter a really interesting period of time where there is absolutely nobody in this entire world who would call Rihanna the most important artist at any given time. But Rihanna is truly about to be a much more accessible Beyoncé, running parallel alongside her. And here's the thing, Rihanna's not really on the beat. She's accessible. Rihanna doesn't really sing in a way that... Melania did not invite Rihanna to sing at last at Donald's inauguration. It just didn't happen.
I mean, I think there's a couple of reasons why that might not have happened, in all honesty, outside of just music.
I'm doing the shoulder challenge right now. The Rihanna shoulder challenge?
I don't know what that is.
Oh my God, there's this commercial, or it's a Vine, I don't know. It's just this video of Rihanna pouring lotion on her shoulder seductively, like looking really intense, and then like brushing it on. I think it's a makeup ad of some kind, and men love doing this absurdly with objects. Okay. So they'll put like lotion on their shoulder and rub it in seductively with a cat. They'll put like whipped cream on their shoulder and rub it in seductively with a mop. And like stuff, just to like point out how stupid she looks. Anyway, we are about to enter an era that is pretty much dominated by a pretty uncrackable force of women. It's going to be pretty much all Lady Gaga, Rihanna, Taylor Swift, Beyonce. Yeah. And we're going to get the torrent of man crap with like Imagine Dragons and Ed Sheeran. And I know we're a bit off from it, but the women are the show for about 5 years.
We're going to get Maroon 5 clones for a while first.
The first one that's going to be of any consequence is Bruno Mars. And then he goes on to be Bruno motherfucking Mars. So
you're going to have to convince me that that's... Maybe by the end of this experiment, I won't want to turn off Bruno Mars the moment I hear the phrase Bruno Mars.
I'm going to be really honest with you. There's nothing I love, but oh my God, that guy's... I know, there's a lot I love. That's the thing. He makes the music I always dreamed of making, and he makes it really well, and he's so fucking talented, man.
So why is Willa Ford on this list with I Want to Be Bad?
Willa Ford was dating Nick Carter at the at the time. Willa Ford used to, if I'm not mistaken, claim that that's why she wasn't more famous.
Okay.
I think this song is everything that didn't work about the pop princess era. You could not be overtly sexual. You could only be understatedly sexual. And the closest you could get was maybe Britney Spears' I'm a Slave for You, because there was nothing about putting it in. But
true. She'd also worked up to that, too. Like, she started... Like, you could watch her... Like, the people who were lusting after her were growing with her over, as weird as and gross as that sounds, like, over a period of time.
Yeah.
Willa came out right out the gate with, you know, just let's smash.
Willa, what you want? That's the rap at the beginning.
Oh, man, she does a wink into the camera in, like, slow motion with, like, a bite that just looks like Lucille Bluth. It's... I remember the hell out of this song.
I gotta be honest. Okay, Arrested Season 5 didn't do it for me. The first half that they posted, it just wasn't great. But you know what? I am legitimately incapable of not enjoying Jessica Walters on my screen.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I just she is so talented, and I really never get tired of the phrase, I'm going to Army, Mother. And I also, of course, will forever love Mrs. Featherbottom.
Oh, yes, of course.
Anyway. Willa Ford is literally meant to be everything that didn't work. If there were things you could do that were too cutesy, honestly, I understand that it was a hit. You know what? No, I'm getting ahead of myself. Let me take a step back. I think in some ways... Stacey Orrico didn't stick around too long because More to Life is too wholesome. I think Willa Ford's I Want to Be Bad is too full of holes. And I think that's a very different problem. Ultimately, I think this song is cool. I think it's sexy. I think it's dangerous. Like, actually, like, I think it does what it's meant to do. It kind of sounds like Faded by Soul Decision. It's a really nice counterpart for that from the female's point of view. And I think it's a really great piece of its time. It's got this, like, itty bitty bit of gothic R&B to it. Like, it's almost like a soupçon.
It's other than, like, the really shitty, like phaser distortion that so many songs from this era randomly had on background vocals. I think it's produced pretty decently, honestly.
It's not even just, like, yeah, you're absolutely right. I've got to stop saying no when I mean, I have to stop colloquially saying no when I mean to confirm. Yes, I agree. You're absolutely right. And I think it goes a step forward, a step further. I think the production matches the intensity of the song.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, if you even listen to it, like, I don't want no one judging me. I want to be bad. You make it look so good. Like, I've got things on my mind I never thought I would. Like, it's almost like she knows, like, the song is self-aware that she's flirting with the idea that this is a bad idea. She wants to be bad. She wants you to come see her be bad.
Right.
One of the big things that all of these artists were selling were their identities.
Yeah.
And so Britney became the schoolgirl, and the schoolgirl became the cat suit, and the cat suit became the jeans with the bikini over them and the snake and the bra. Like, Britney reinvented herself visually, and that was actually something I was going to get to. We were talking about how, you know, the girls had to become women in order for that sexuality transfer to occur, and it still had to be gradual.
So I looked at Bella Ford. I thought she was in the extremely not good reboot of Friday the 13th. She was in that, and then her Wikipedia is pretty interesting. It's worth a read. It's all over the place. But yeah, hasn't done a whole lot since this.
No, she didn't really have the talent. She just had the gimmick. She was willing to be sluttier than the others because that was her choice. Transition into the next thing. The next part of this segment is, for me, well, so the next segment, part of the show, is the four biggest pop princesses I think we can discuss. I think they are unquestionably the four biggest pop princesses from this era. That is, of course, Mandy, Jessica, Britney, and Christina. I do feel that there is some level of talent meets fame that ultimately resulted that, like, I can't tell you what it was that made it these four women. I really can't. I kind of think I can. I think it's that Mandy Moore was the young, cute, kittenish one. Yes. Jessica Simpson was the virginal one for middle America.
Yes.
Britney Spears was the, and I'm going to say this, L.A. one. She was, like, glitzy, glam, honestly not that talented, but with enough lights, anything looks good. And Christina Aguilera was the talented one.
Yeah.
And it does strike me how very the same woman these four women were made to look. That is not to say that all four of them looked the same. I don't even believe all four of them are the same original not blonde hair color. But these four women were conformed to this vanilla extract poured into a Barbie mold. And it's sad that this was the definition by which all girls were told to measure themselves, and all boys were told to measure all girls. And I think some of what we are cracking is we are talking about the transition that this took. And one of the things we have said, I've mentioned Ashanti, Christina Milian, Rihanna, we've talked about Beyonce. They do all have in common a darker complexion.
Yes.
The women we are coming on are women that help remind us of the diversity of pop music, as opposed to the incredibly blanched white version we've sustained for the most part so far. It is important to note that I don't believe that we should be calling Destiny's Child's early music pop music. I believe we should be calling Destiny's Child early music R&B. Anyway, on to the women, because, you know, I know half this is going to be coming.
This song is a returning champion. I think this was a pre-Nico episode, though. We have
covered this song Nico. Before,
but
I defended the hell out of this song, and it was one of the many times I told the Mandy Moore story.
Ah, yes, okay. So then, talk to me about this other Mandy Moore song that I've never heard before until right the second.
So, Mandy Moore's I Wanna Be With You is in many ways her breakthrough track. She had Candy, and Candy was a success, and it was Candy by Mandy, but she was 14. It was hard to take her seriously.
It's a JoJo thing, kind of.
Yeah, it's a JoJo thing. And as I mentioned, so much of her early music had this incredibly sexual overtone to it, and frankly, a lot of it wasn't very good. She had easily the weakest debut album of the four. Her album was determined to be so terrible, they re-recorded half of it, new songs, much better quality, a very strong departure to an acoustic pop sound from the other women, giving her her own identity, including this I Want to Be With You song, which was featured in the movie Center Stage, which was not a huge hit, but was at least a big enough hit with our generation to make this song memorable. 17 really connected with me at 17, and there's something about this song that's, I've talked about how sexual her lyrics are in the past, but it feels right and it feels good, and I'm not going to do something stupid, and this once I want to feel like I can do what I want if I hold tight. I'm going to save my best behavior for a little later because I'm only 17. I think I've mentioned this song before. It's just finally here. This was literally kind of that coming of age turning point we were just discussing, that each of these women had to slowly play out across the time that it took them to get out single after single after single. These women had to sexually mature in front of the entire world audience, and then they had to submit it in the form of a song and a music video for people's pleasure and whatever in order to get accepted as women. And that's fucking disturbing. And this song, though, kind of is the opposite of that. It's kind of Mandy Moore recording a song about being like, look, it's a mistake, but I'm gonna fuck, and you need to shut the fuck up. This isn't for you. I'm gonna literally run away and have sex with somebody. This isn't on stage. This isn't on camera. Anyone who's ever been in love has got to know what it feels to have a dream, and no one can change your mind. No, not this time. And those are actually the lyrics from the song. And at first they don't sound like lyrics, and then they turn into lyrics when they start rhyming out of nowhere for the final couplet, because that's poetry. Anyway, point of my story. It's actually just a really of its moment song. It's very, the thing we were just discussing. These women were made to play out their sexual awakenings for the pleasure of men and the pleasure of male executives, to be sexual role models to young girls, and in a way that was always presented to please men. But this song is not about pleasing men.
Right.
This song very much sounds like Mandy Moore really wants to know what a dick feels in her. And it's yeah, hot, and definitely this Mandy Moore is one of my, if you think I got it for Lindsay. Jesus, Mandy Moore is just literally too beautiful. And Rapunzel might be my favorite Disney princess. Oh, there's the gay again. And I can't bring myself to watch This Is Us because I already had 30-something. I'm good. But, I just love Mandy Moore. And I think this is an example of what made her famous enough to be the one to have the fewest charting hits, the lowest charting hits, the least consistent hits, the least visual access, the least... she wasn't on television the way Britney and Christina were in the tabloids and in the magazines and on the talk shows. She wasn't on Newlyweds the way Jessica was. Mandy Moore made movies, and she made mediocre records that occasionally got airplay, and she made music videos that appeared on TRL. And I think this is an example of why she was able to do that and stay relevant.
And she wasn't even in movies that were, like, made for her, a la Crossroads. She was in, like, indie flicks for the most part early on. Like, I have fond memories of her in Saved. I think she's really good in that movie.
I love Saved. I do think she's a great actress. I actually like American Dreams. Dreams with a Z. I just think Mandy Moore is tremendous.
All right, so you have one more chance, one more time to get on your soapbox, to do some standing for Jessica Simpson. It's probably, so far, the one place where you haven't pulled me to your side whatsoever on this entire
thing. No. I think there was a confusion, and I need to, you know, because you're not the only one who's thought that. We're going to rewind. Flop. I like With You. I think With You is cute. I like a couple of songs from Jessica Simpson's first record.
Okay.
I think Jessica Simpson is a nightmare. Okay. I think she's a disaster. I think she's an idiot that's a genius that's an idiot that took some vocal lessons, but she frequently sounds like somebody's punching her in the throat. Like, I just...
She managed to survive having a really obnoxious religious stage dad, so kudos to her.
I think... I just wish the Little Mermaid was about her and the witch won and she never got her voice back. And I just wish. I just don't care for her. That's why I purposely picked a song that I don't even think was her biggest single, but I picked a song that had a hot guy in it because I just don't like Jessica Simpson. I'm so excited to never talk about her again.
Oh, good. If we're on the same page on that one then.
Really excited to talk about Ashley a few times because there's some Ashley moments that just, oh gosh, you know, there's this one Ashley Simpson thing we're going to talk about that makes me laugh so hard I think I choke to death. Oh, it's going to be great. Anyway, Where You Are was the single that Jessica and Nick recorded for Jessica's first album. She recorded this first album, and it's all over the place musically. I actually think her first single, I Want to Love You Forever, is kind of a disaster. I think the final single off this record is... off her first record is the one that samples the John Cougar Mellencamp song.
Oh, yeah, the fucking Jack and Diane sample.
Yeah,
fuck that song.
Jessica Simpson wasn't known for her music, really. She was known for being famous for being Jessica Simpson. Instead of picking a song, like, because, you know, I like With You, like I said, but instead of picking a song that's like, wow, this is what Jessica Simpson was known for, I picked the song that they wouldn't let her release her vocal performance on because it was too annoying.
Holy shit.
I talked about this on the show one time. There was an episode of Newlyweds where she was like, the studio made me re-record Sweetest Sin less complicated so people can sing along at home. I'm going to tell you, as a reasonable adult, looking back on the situation, I'm pretty sure it went a little more like this. Everybody thinks Jessica Simpson's got a really annoying voice, but I have this very clear memory of when my father used to be a member of the Knights of Columbus to any extent. And he used to help run events for charities and would get me confirmation volunteer hours, or, you know, they would pay under the table sometimes. It was just a way to get me in, you know, work and whatever. And I have this very clear memory of being in eighth grade, and it was me and it was these two senior guys, and it was one of the only times I ever remember thinking they're so much bigger than me. And I have this very clear memory of them saying to me, what are you listening to in your Walkman? Are you listening to like what are you listening to? And they were trying not to be dicks exactly, but they were very like LOL pop music. And I was like, yeah. And is it like, is it some Britney Spears or some shit? And I was like, no. And they were like, haha, fuck that Britney Spears. But man, I would take that Jessica Simpson's cherry, man. I'd fuck that bitch's cherry right out of her. Would you fuck Jesus that bitch? And I think
Christ.
That phraseology is just so specific. And I'm like, okay. And the second one was like, yeah, man, would you do it? Would you do it? And I was like, and in my head I'm like, yesterday I got head from a dude. I'm not going to blow up my spot and say anything stupid. I'm just going to be like, this makes me uncomfortable. And just like walked out. I just like walked right the fuck out of the room. And I just remember thinking, that was not pleasant. But anyway, that is my Jessica Simpson memory. I'm ready to say goodbye to Jessica Simpson forever. I did not love you forever. It was too much to ask of me. I have no interest in going where you are. Other jokes here. Moving on. Bitch out.
Do you think that Christina Aguilera was really, really mad when Britney Spears kissed Madonna and then they cut away before Christina could do it and just everyone remembers that Britney did it?
I think it's that, like, Christina did a peck and Britney did, like, full-on tongue-lashing. And I think that's really the memory.
Worth noting, the song is Me Against the Music with Britney and Madonna.
Here's my commentary on Madonna. Madonna got famous for being shocking. And I'm like, just a quick thing on Madonna. Madonna got famous for being shocking, like a virgin, masturbating on stage. Then she did like a prayer, and that was so revolutionary, and it was her kissing a black man, and it was a black Jesus. And
still one
of
my all-time favorite pop songs. Like,
it's an incredible piece of music, yeah. She did Erotica, and that was obviously explicitly sexual. And she did The Sex Book, explicitly sexual. She did Vogue for the Dick Tracy soundtrack. You know, everything was really... It was just this chaotic idea of pop frenzy and passion. And there was just so much to it. And there was always so much production. And then all of a sudden, one day, Madonna says, "I have conquered everything except being taken seriously." And she set her sights on awards, and she did the Take a Bow video and the You'll See video as auditions for Evita. She got Evita. She did Evita. She didn't really get the kind of recognition she was looking for from
the
performance.
People were mad about Evita. She thought that was going to be an Oscar thing.
And it was terrible. It's neither here nor there. You know, she has Lourdes, and she releases Ray of Light. And Ray of Light is... I just remember being in fifth grade and like being like, "Oh my God, I wanna love religion. This makes me want to love something as much as she loves religion." I'm like in fifth and sixth grade, and I'm having thoughts like that in relation to Ray of Light because it's so powerful to me. I had this really clear memory when everybody was like, "Oh my God, Madonna made out with Drake," when like Drake was relevant 5 years ago, and Madonna made out with him at Coachella.
I don't know about
If you I'm Google sure that, this, it was a huge deal.
5 years ago, I was definitely not paying attention to popular culture, so that's another massive blank space that we will get to in a couple of real world years.
Decades. Yeah. Madonna just like got all up on Drake, sat on his lap and made out with him, and a lot of the reviews, like, he actually did not know it was coming, and his reaction is not the most flattering for her. And the reviews were like, "What a sad old lady."
Oh.
And I'm like,
that is sad.
I'm like, "Do you guys think she's a sad old lady? I want you to think about how she's been famous this entire time. She masturbated on a stage, and then she kissed a black man, and then she released a book about her fucking pussy, and then she tried to get some credibility. She got the credibility. She won like 5 motherfucking Grammys for Ray of Light because it's an incredible record. She then learned to play her own instrument. So she learned guitar for music. She played guitar on that record. Then she decided to go back to having fun and made out with Britney Spears at an awards show, just like she masturbated at an awards show and then made out to make a point. She made out to make a point. She pushed the envelope a different way. She made out with a woman half her age that was considered the next her. She made out with her fucking protege that she had never protégéd in any way. She managed to make Britney Spears' career moment about her in a way. I understand that Britney was at the time performing like a virgin, and it was celebrating Madonna, yeah. But there is something very Madonna kissing Britney Spears is very, "I'm taking you." And it's even in this song, which I think is probably one of my favorite Britney Spears songs ever. At one point in Madonna's very short part, which thank God it's short, she doesn't sound great in this song. She says, "Hey, Britney, you say you want to lose control? Well, come over here. I got something to show you. Sexy ladies, they want to see you bare your soul. Something, show me what you got." I think Madonna kept trying to be sexually pushing the envelope, and I think the people that were receiving that message from her were no longer in the age demographic she was concerned with. I think Madonna was still desperate to be received by young people for the same shocking things she had been received by young people by in the past that challenged older folks. But older folks were the only ones still paying attention to Madonna, and they were not amused by the same shtick, especially because she was doing that shtick with their children. And then 10 years later, she's faded back into obscurity in 2013, 2014, 2015, whatever the fuck it was. She sits on Drake's lap at Coachella and she makes out with him at a live-streamed, televised performance. She makes out with a black young man. She literally finds a way to combine everything she'd ever done in a new way. And I just realized how much she is this idea of shocking people with the same performance endlessly. And in a lot of ways, this record is the last moment before Britney fades into Crazy Town for a little bit. Britney Spears is about to fade into obscurity, and before she fades into obscurity, I want to remember a really nice thing about Britney Spears and a kind of cool thing that was going on in our childhood. We talked about how that one time I was like, ha ha ha, music's really... what if music's turned into commercials? And you were like, LOL, dude, what do you think the 90s and aughts were? And I'm like, oh, you're right. But there was actually a time where there was kind of like a cool crossover between the commercials and reality. While Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake were dating, and the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC was like Hillary versus Bernie, and you had to make your choices on the battlegrounds, and all of that was going on.
And that it would be litigated forever online, and people would never stop forever and ever. Even when we should stop, we're just going to keep doing it forever.
Yep. They did this really strange McDonald's campaign where, like, these sampler CDs were sold that featured songs from each of, like, NSYNC and Britney, and they were, like, mashed up or something like that. And I don't know how I got one. I definitely didn't buy it, but I feel like somebody else bought it and was like, I don't want this, and, like, threw it to me, and were like, here you go. And I was like, oh, I kind of have all their albums, but thank you. And I don't know what it was, but you know, like, sometimes when you were a kid, you would, like, get it stuck in your head that you should skip that track, you don't like it. Even if you can't really remember what it is, you just skip that track. And then, like, when you finally listen to that song, you're like, holy shit, that's the best song I've ever heard. Why wasn't I into that at the time? And, like, that kind of thing.
I don't know if that's ever happened to me, but I could get that.
Yeah, I would, like, skip songs, and then I would finally hear it, and I'd be like, oh, undiscovered gem, thank you. Inexplicably, I listened to that CD one time, and I'm pretty sure I can't be hallucinating all of this, and One Kiss From You by Britney Spears was on it, and I had no idea that that was a song that was already on Oops, I Did It Again at the time, and I was like, this song is so great, why is it just on a McDonald's thing? Oh, no, it's on the album I already own, it's literally the song I just skip. Got it. Why do I skip this? And it was like getting a bonus song on an album years later, an unreleased track, if you will.
Weird that they put like a non-single on those things. Like, you'd think they would just smash whatever single was big enough at the time onto those.
I think it was like a single from each plus like an album track from each to pad them.
Oh, I see. Okay, gotcha.
This way they could do more of them. And yeah, it's just actually a really sweet song. It's like... it's everything that was good about these pop princesses being sweet. There's something... I've talked about the commodity of youth and how we need to break the commodity of youth, especially for the sake of the youth, who then find out that in the real world they're not really worth anything because they've aged and they've cracked and they don't look like they did when they were 17 and everything held up to God. So we talk about this idea of, like, this really innocent young romance, and because so much of homosexuality is rooted in a physical sexuality, it can sometimes be hard to find really innocent cuteness. And I actually have a really specifically sweet memory of, like, a really nice day with a nice guy being super handholdy and, like, nuzzly and kissy years after this song should have been relevant. Not too many years, but anyway, it's a nice memory, and it kind of goes with this song, and I think this song actually kind of sounds like it. Now, to the pop princess I showed up for, the real one.
It's Christina. One of them I think everyone knows, one of them that, I mean, I certainly don't know. Beautiful, I think, is maybe wasn't at the time, but has become one of her, like, most identifying tracks.
It's because of Mean Girls. I'm not even kidding. I'm not being funny. This song would be really forgettable in a lot of ways. There's this whole notion, there's this whole school of thought that something can be too big to be remembered well.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's overwrought as hell.
It's still an incredible song.
It has become one of her defining songs, though.
Oh, for sure. It's just embarrassing at times, because it's funny. And I think Beautiful could have become MacArthur Park. We could turn back and look at that bridge where, I'm sorry, but there's times where Christina's just shrieking. They're beautiful notes, but I can't even figure out what the fuck she's saying. She's just kind of like doing her runs and her trills, and she's just blowing it out, and it's incredible.
Definitely always the big, like the big criticism of her is her, as weird as this sounds, her over-reliance on her voice. You know, like, she's the equivalent of, like, she sometimes goes into the equivalent of, like, the last 3 minutes of Freebird. It's just, like, fucking wank at a certain point.
Yeah, it's my Christina Aguilera impression that I do. That's, you know, I do row, row, row your boat, but I never get past the first row because I'm too busy doing my miasma, which is, you know, just the whole time with the flipping fingers on the microphone.
Always take the over if she's doing the national anthem.
Always. Maybe that's why you should take the under. Because she's going to also be betting on herself and she's going to be like...
she's just going to speed run it one day.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light? Everyone dance. What's up? She just like gets everybody through it in a good Sousa march. Anyway, I think if it weren't for Damien in Mean Girls, we would not remember Beautiful as well as we do. I think we remember Beautiful as well as we do because it's hysterical and we laugh with it. But you know what? I feel like okay, so I make no joke about my mental illness. I make tons of jokes at my own expense, but you know what I mean. And, like, yeah, I'm pretty sure maybe not everybody grew up, like, so full of self-hate. And so every time I looked in the mirror, I would literally think, oh, my God, if I have to look in the mirror one more time looking like this, I'm going to kill myself.
Yeah.
I can't tell you how many thoughts I had like that growing up and how many thoughts, you know, there's still days I have, you know, nowhere near that extreme, but there's still days where I'm like, oh my God, you fat son of a bitch, get what's wrong with you? And like, and I know I'm a very fit person and I know I'm doing great, but like, there's days you just can't get out of that mentality. And I'm not saying I have hit days where I'm like, I'm just going to go sit with my guitar and sing Beautiful for 45 minutes, but like it's happened, and I know I'm talking about what a dramatic mess this song is, but I would be lying to you right now if I didn't say this song brought me some comfort at some really, really, really scary, dark, low, horrifying places in my life. And she sings it like she really is there for you. She sings it like it's a helpline. She sings it like she loves you, and it is such a manipulative thing, but I am beautiful, you are beautiful, we are beautiful, and yeah. She makes everything about we.
Yeah, I do love that switch in the song.
It literally can make a very scared 16-year-old boy who feels like there's nothing left feel much less alone, amazingly, like she's right there. And maybe that's even part of why I love her. Today is the 2-year anniversary of... The day we're recording this is the 2-year anniversary of the Pulse Massacre, and it... goes without saying that the gay community has the... maybe it doesn't. Maybe people don't know this. Gay teen males have the highest rate of suicide of any group in America. Period. End of the sentence. And maybe it was just a little important today to include this. Anyway... Love for All Seasons is a cheery, cute little dance pop number that sounds kind of like a lot of the other stuff that I put on here, but that was my first, like, I love Christina Aguilera and this is my favorite song kind of song by Christina Aguilera. There would be many, 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 many as my voice would continue to drop and I would sound a little bit less Poindexter, but this was definitely the one that, like, before my voice dropped, I sang along with as hard as I could, at my full range, and I would hit every note along with her. And I remember the first time my voice started cracking toward the high shit, and it just, I still sing it to this day, and it's a great song. And then if I can, may I introduce my honorable mention? Oh, baby girl, better known as Aaliyah.
Ah, yes. This is also a returning champion, I believe. I think I spoke at length about Jet Li in this video just doing fucking martial arts moves in a hall of mirrors. I mean, thank you. You never really had to convince me that Aaliyah was good. This whole kind of experiment, Aaliyah so far is one of the new old discoveries for me. She deserves a place, not just on this list, but I think elevated above this list. So I'm very glad to see that you included her at the tail end of this.
It was a no-brainer for me, actually. I had to do a little research just to make sure that I can almost barely fudge the numbers. The first now included Mbop by Hanson, and that was, I believe, 1997?
Something like that, yeah.
And that makes me feel entitled to include Aaliyah, who I know got her start in 94, 95, but nothing. I'm sorry, One in a Million is like 96, 97, and 98-ish, and I can kind of get away with it. Try Again was, of course,
I think already That Somebody was on the first episode, was it not?
I believe it was early on. You Somebody? Are You That Somebody was her big, big, big breakout.
Girl.
She had had some success with her R. Kelly-based career, much more success than with her R. Kelly-based marriage. She then was kind of rediscovered by Missy Elliott and Timbaland, and One in a Million was one of the first records I bought with money that I'd saved up by unscrupulously sneaking some of the lunch money my mom gave me away into my pocket and buying less mood best food for lunch.
Did the same thing. I lived on Swedish Fish for like 4 years of high school so I could buy albums.
Yep. I did it in middle school, though. I would like secretly bring like a pack of pretzels to lunch and just pocket the $3. And my mom would be like, where are you getting this money for music from? And I would, you know, and now I would just be like, turning tricks, bitch. But like, you know, at the time, I was just like, I don't know, so ask me. And so one of the first things I bought was Aaliyah's One in a Million. Just what a fucking outstanding record, beginning to end. Try Again is well known. I unfortunately think a lot of Aaliyah's later career is better known than a lot of her early career. Not that that's a bad thing, because Ain't Nothing But a Number, the A.R. Kelly album, is pretty forgettable. One in a Million, however, is an extraordinary record. Then there's a very long period of time without an Aaliyah record. It's Are You That Somebody, and it's the Romeo's Die soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
And that's followed up with Self-Titled Aaliyah, which unfortunately would go on to be... Self-Titled Aaliyah would go on to be her last album. It had such a span of sounds. So much of it sounds so close to what Janet Jackson had been doing, would continue to do. And by that, I mean I am comparing this much younger woman to this legendary icon who had been in the public eye and arts her whole life.
Yeah.
You know.
Almost kind of that, you know, even though they never worked together, almost kind of that Madonna... Britney divide that you were speaking of.
Yeah, especially when you consider they both have what I would refer to as the softer end of voices. Janet isn't known for her uncontrollable vocals, but frankly, neither was Aaliyah. Aaliyah was a tremendous performer, a great dancer, an unbelievable beauty, an okay actress.
Let's not prop up. I mean, we're gonna prop up her music. We don't have to pretend that she could act for shit. She really couldn't.
Okay, fair. But, you know, Aaliyah.
I'm with you on her voice. She had such a... I mean, maybe because I didn't listen to a ton of R&B from that era, it's not as unique, but to my ears, that breathy...
No, it's super unique.
Like, it's like simultaneously... Like, impressive. Usually, like, there's like a, you know, that like four chart. Like, you go in like different graphs. It's like sexy... And I will say it's like breathy, and it's like usually it doesn't cross over too well, but hers does cross over too well. Hers does cross over significantly well, and has that combination of both that to me is unique.
No, it, you know what? I agree with you that maybe it's less unique than you think it is due to your experience with the genre from the time. But regardless of zeitgeist, I think. There's a reason we're still talking about Aaliyah. She hasn't really been on that many nows, and we've managed to bring her up. And it can't just be that I'm a super fan. Actually, it can be that I'm a super fan. It probably is just that I'm a super fan.
I put her on the now Mount Rushmore for, like, if we had to pick four artists that we've covered on this show to, like, be on the Mount Rushmore of Now and Again, like, I would first ballot vote her to be on it.
Yeah, I would probably say Aaliyah, Bey,
yeah.
Justin.
Yeah.
It's got to be Justin, because to be honest, at the time, it would be Justin.
And Baby Bash.
And Baby Bash. Absolutely.
We got the most mileage out of him, for sure.
I actually do think the grand total most amount of time talked about any two artists are Gwen Stefani and Baby Bash. which is a really weird distinction for Gwen Stefani to hold. I can't believe she's got to be associated with baby bashing on Wikipedia now.
It's like every time someone clicks play on the playlist and one of his songs comes up, like his Venmo gets like 1 cent higher, and he's just like, somebody else out there heard.
Somebody else out there is part of this movement. One of the things that's really interesting is none of my friends, like, I've only gotten one piece of really bad feedback ever from our friends, like, bad feedback. And that was my friend Tori. Hey, Tori. Incredible. She writes and draws our sister book, Capes and Boots. So Kid Riot has become Riot Squad, and it's about the whole team, and it's, you know, it's a whole lot of fun. Capes and Boots is about the all-woman of color station of a TV... wow, I can't talk. The all-woman of color crew of a TV news show led by Roberta Whitley. And it's a really incredible book that tries to take a look at the truth. And it's really, it's a lot of fun to get to sit back and just be able to watch this awesome book that, like, plays with all of these amazing toys that, like, I'm like, okay, I'm going to leave them for a while and just watch. And it's a lot of fun. But she gave me... some feedback that was, I'm super disappointed you didn't, like, at least touch on every song on the Now. Mm. And I was like, I get that. And it's definitely no insult to her, but I did get a lot of, you know, sometimes you do just kind of try and find stuff to say about songs you got nothing to say about. And that's true. I just wonder how many of my friends aren't telling me how much they hate the baby bash stuff. Like, the fact that Kevin glared at me the second time he heard me do it and literally felt it was important to message me, so this is what we're doing now, baby bash is your bit, and, like, that says something to me. That says that maybe people don't find it as funny as I do, so, I guess you all need to figure out how to find it funnier, because it's not going anywhere.
If you donate to our Patreon at the $10 tier, you can get episodes with baby bash edited out.
We're actually going to start splicing Baby Bash in, like Rickrolling, but we're going to splice it in where you least expect it. We're going to, like, hybridize songs. So it's going to be, like, Baby Bashley Simpson. And so, Chris, where can everybody find you?
Is that the end? Is that how we're ending? Is that how we're shooting off? Looks like Team Rocket's blasting off again.
You can find me at Instagram.
I guess so. All right. That's the end.
Nico Vasillo, NicoVasillo. You can find me at KidRiotComics.com, along with the amazingness that is Capes and Boots. For the month of June, we are covering Pride. We are very proud to be an all-queer creation team. It's a, you know, we didn't come together because we're all queer. Well, I mean, like, my husband and I came together because we're queer, if you think about it. But, like, the others are women, so that wouldn't make sense for us to come to them. So we're all queer, and we're making a Pride month of things, talking about all sorts of different queer prides. It's, you know, it's a rainbow spectrum, and it's not just white, cis, gay men and heteronormative relationships, and that's got to stop being the only version of Pride we show. You can also find me you can find me on facebook.com/actionduo. I make music. If you enjoy me singing, I tried to sing very little this episode. Like, I think I only sang 3 times. Hey, Chris, where can everybody find you other than with your nose in a book?
At Chris Podcasts on Twitter, where I'm just talking shit. Cageclub.me, where you can find me on a whole bunch of shows, including upcoming episodes, I believe. An episode of Boyfriend Material, the Ryan Gosling podcast, just dropped or is about to drop, where I talk about a misunderstood classic Only God Forgives, and a couple of Watch the Throne episodes, the Charlize Theron podcast, that are about to drop or have just dropped, depending on when this comes out. So I'm all over the podcasts this month.
And didn't our Alien 3 one just drop?
Yes, and the Alien 3 episode that we recorded so long ago that I actually forgot we recorded just dropped.
I had definitely kazammed this one. I'd forgotten all of that happened because it had been so long, and I convinced myself we didn't do it and that it had gone to somebody else. So when I saw myself tagged in something, you can imagine my surprise when I saw myself tagged in a podcast that I convinced myself I hadn't recorded.
Yeah, I think we had fun on it. It's been a minute.
I'm ornery. I'm real ornery.
Well, it is Alien 3. But, so yeah, cageclub.me, at Chris Podcasts on Twitter. Head on over there. Head on over to Cage Club to check out the liner notes, especially for this episode, so you can get a listen to this playlist yourself and relive some of the glory days of the girl singers before they become the woman singers.
It's just really cool. It's been really fascinating to just talk to you, Chris, and people hear us just talk. And I think we're fascinating. We think we're fascinating.
I completely agree. Or I would be. I mean, I would be doing this if this is the conversations that we would have anyway. Like, the fact that people listen and seem to enjoy listening is just gravy. And thank all of you for being the gravy on our disco fries.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. You know, you guys are the truffle oil on our poutine, and because mine's better. And so,
you're not wrong.
So yeah, that's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking this has turned out to be phenomenal. I've loved doing this. I can't wait to do the next one. And I love when you guys tell me what you guys think. It's really cool that I get messages like. Because my friends don't all listen when they first come out. So I get messages just like all the time. Just like a rolling every now and then. I just get it. Every now and then I get a now and again. So.
Oh, that's the other thing. You know, speaking of outros, write into the mailbag. nowandagaincast@gmail.com with questions, concerns, praise, etc. Because we're going to do a mailbag episode probably this summer. And ask us anything you would like. You can just say... a word, and we'll just word association for like 20 minutes. That's fine. We can do it. We're pros. Well, congratulations, Nico. You got off probation. You did your first episode. You just got to tighten up those endings, and you'll be good to go. You can have your own spin-off podcast that's significantly more successful.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. Finally, I get to leave you behind.
Until next time, we will catch you on the flip side. Girl, you'll be a woman soon. I love you so much, can't count all the ways I died for you, girl, and all they can say is he's not your kind. They never get tired of putting it down, and I never know when I come around what I'm gonna find. Don't let them make up your mind.